I was in a coma for 6 weeks while the doctors told my wife I was going to die. When I woke up, she told me the most fantastic story. My team kept running the business without me. Freelancers reached out to my team and said, "We will do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital." I consider that the greatest accomplishment in my career. My name is Craig Andrews, and this is the Leaders and Legacies podcast, where we talk to leaders creating an impact beyond themselves. At the end of today's interview, I'll tell you how you can be the next leader featured on this show. Today, I want to welcome John Morris. He is the founder and CEO of Fiscal Advocate. His Engine Buy platform is designed to give CEOs clear visibility into their numbers, profitability, cash position, and strategic opportunities. John launched his first agency in 2004 with prize money from University of Chicago's New Venture Challenge. He spent nearly 16 years scaling it from a solo operation into one of the largest independent marketing agencies in the world. Now he helps clients and provides accounting and advisory services, basically help folks make better decisions. John, welcome.
Thanks, Craig, for having me here.
Well, first off, I got to ask you about, you know, so I have an agency and I'm a little bit envious. That's amazing. So it was a marketing agency?
It was a digital marketing agency.
Very cool. Was there like one area you specialized or one?
So initially we focused on paid search.
Yeah.
And then we expanded to all of digital media. So paid search, programmatic, affiliate, SEO, social media. Social media didn't exist, by the way, when I first started my agency.
Yeah.
Which is kind of crazy to just think about. And then we went into web development. We had an analytics department. So our three primary services were digital media, analytics, and web development.
You know, and so much of that was new. I mean, when I hear Gary Vee talk about, you know, Google AdWords, he was like one of the first users of Google AdWords when it was cheap.
Yeah. So, and the fact that it was new and the fact that it was so measurable was a big part of my success. I would love to take a ton of credit and just to say it was my brilliance. There was, you know, a lot of luck of being in the right place at the right time. So there were billions and billions of dollars being spent on linear TV advertising, and that was all moving to digital media. Not all of it, but a large portion of it was moving to digital media. And the demand for people who are sophisticated digital marketers was far outweighing the supply that existed. Yeah. And so that, you know, if I started Rise today, it was called Rise Interactive, I don't think I'd be nearly as successful as I was when I started in 2004.
Do you know Brad Geddes?
Is it Brad Geddes or Greg?
Maybe I'm getting, it's been years since I've talked to him. A big Google AdWords guy right there in Chicago.
Yeah, I believe I've met him before. I'm not close with them though.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. You know, and you know, so, like so many things in life, yeah, there's an element of luck. I mean,
yeah,
listen to Joe Rogan. He just lucked out and got a sitcom early in his career.
Yeah.
But it's not luck alone. There's luck plus talent.
Yeah.
I mean, there's, you know, maybe you're lucky and you were born into the right family and you can spend, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars figuring out how to build businesses and people will keep giving you money until you eventually figure it out. That's happened at least here in Texas. But there has to be a certain amount of talent.
So, well, let me take a step back a little bit. I use the word luck, but the reality is it was purposely thought about going into an industry that's fast growing.
Yeah.
You know, talking to you before this interview, I mentioned I did 6 triathlons and 2 marathons in one summer.
Yep.
And my very first half Ironman, by the way, I only did 2, so it makes it sound like I've done a ton of them. But, you know, my very first one of my many that I've done, I had a 28-mile bike ride on one road out in Mattoon, Illinois, which is basically farm country. I turned around and then went back 28 miles. So it's a 56 mile bike ride. I normally would go about 20 miles per hour for my bike rides. The first 28 miles, I went between 6 and 7 miles per hour. On the way back, I went 35 to 40 miles per hour. And the reason why was there was wind going between 25 and 30 miles per hour. So I was biking directly into the wind for the first half. And then I had the wind at my back for the back half. Yeah. And the reason why I bring that up is probably one of the most important things that is not talked about enough, which is if you are going into an industry with wind at your back, you can make a lot of mistakes and you're still going to grow. If you go in an industry that is shrinking, I don't care, you know, how smart you are or how talented you are, you can't beat the wind. And so I spend a lot of time thinking about where is the wind blowing and how do I make sure that I'm steering both the services I offer and the clients I go after so that I'm going in high growth areas.
That's such a brilliant insight. I love that analogy. And just honestly, I'm sitting there, I'm thinking through, what am I working on? Am I fighting the wind or the wind at the back? You've really challenged me.
Yeah. So I call it double wind. So the first type of wind is the services that you're offering. You know, I do a lot of annual and quarterly planning. Every single company I've talked to, 100% success rate is talking about incorporating AI into their business in some way, that this is the year that they're going to figure out how they leverage AI.
Yep.
So if you just want to think about where the wind is blowing, you know, are you thinking about a solution that offers helping people with AI in some capacity? And then the second thing is the clients that you win. You know, our largest customer at Rise went from a publicly traded company with a $500 million market cap to a $20 billion market cap. When we first won them, they gave us $60,000 a year in fees. When I left, they were giving us millions of dollars a year in fees. Now, there are three things that happened that allowed us to get that. The first one was they grew rapidly. If they didn't grow rapidly, they would never be spending millions of dollars with us.
Right.
The second thing was we did a really good job. And so they kept us. We went through five CMOs. Now, the third thing was, and this is, I think, in my opinion, rare, this particular company had insane loyalty to their existing vendors. It was very hard to unseat us.
Yep.
And, you know, I had a competitor of mine that grew faster than me. And I consider one of their biggest differentiators was that they were headquartered in Silicon Valley. And they won these companies. They were startups at the time. One was called Facebook. Another one was called LinkedIn. Another one was called Airbnb. Another one was called 23andMe. And so they, because those companies grew so rapidly, they grew really rapidly. So that's what double wind is. You have wind in your service offering and you have wind with the clients you win.
That makes a lot of sense. You know, there's something I'd love to explore with you, and it's not necessarily finance, but it ties into what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the, you know, some of the major, let's just call them marketing platforms, CRM platforms. And I'm wondering if their business model is going to be viable in 5 years. And, you know, tying into AI, I've gotten fascinated by this thing called Clawbox, which is a pre-configured version of OpenClaw, which is like a personal assistant.
Uh-huh.
I'm looking at them like, I wonder how many things that, you know, folks are paying, you know, $1,200, $1,500 a month subscription.
Yeah.
Where if they had just a basic CRM plus one of these Clawboxes, it could go in and it could do all the automations. It could help them figure out the leads to work. It could do all these things and, you know, basically nuke, you know, a $35 billion company.
I mean, look, you've seen a lot of the SaaS companies getting hit, you know, in Wall Street recently for that very reason. There's a lot of fear about that. The question comes down to, you know, I don't know if the winners today will be the same winners tomorrow. You know, they've built this moat, and as what you're talking about is, can that moat be eliminated? And I think the answer is potentially yes.
Yeah.
But I do believe that there will be new moats, you know what I mean, that I don't know what they are yet, that will get formed.
Yeah. Well, an example, you know, people were recently talking about, you know, how we, you know, need to break up Google. They're an unstoppable monopoly. I'm like, they're not unstoppable. They can be unseated, you know, within a generation.
Yeah.
And people are like, no, that's impossible. And the example I go back to, I said, you know, in the late 90s, they were saying the same thing about Microsoft. And they drug Bill Gates in front of Congress. And Bill Gates in Congress said something that he got ridiculed over. And he said, look, yes, we're very dominant in the market because we work really hard. But make no mistake, in one generation, we could be unseated. And they just ridiculed him for that, saying that's impossible. And the irony is, when he made that statement, there was a little known startup in Mountain View, California called Google.
Yeah.
New moat.
Exactly. And, you know, look, I mean, then OpenAI came out. Now, Gemini's getting market share, but, you know, OpenAI and ChatGPT has been a big threat to Google's core revenue stream. You know, I use some type of LLM, whether it's Gemini or ChatGPT, more than I use Google's core search now.
And I think that trend's only going to increase. It's rare for me. If I do a search, it's usually so I can bring up the prompt to launch the LLM.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you want to, now I'm just going to gemini.google.com. I'm not even going to Google anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and so let's go ahead and pivot to finances. And yeah, I mentioned I got kind of a tough question. I'll just throw it on the front end.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that, and let me see if I have this right. Basically, what you do, you help businesses, you help CEOs have clarity in making decisions to understand kind of the deep little nuances in the books. So why don't we start there? Tell us what you do. And then I'm going to come back with a question about AI about that.
So typically, I take over the finance department for marketing agencies, tech service agencies, and any other company in the professional service realm. So my expertise is people, B2B companies that sell time.
Yeah.
And there's a few different divisions. So there's a bookkeeping division, which is like invoicing, AR, AP, payroll, month-end close. There's something called FP&A, and this might be an oxymoron, but this is what I consider the fun part of finance, which is monthly insights, cash flow analysis, budgeting and forecasting. Then there's a third component, which is resource planning, which is really making sure that you have real understanding of the people who are assigned to services and assigned to clients, that you're not overstaffed, you're not understaffed. And then lastly, we do strategic planning. So those are kind of the core offerings. So now give me the hardball question.
Well, and so before we go there, why is that important? And how does it help the CEO?
So I'll break it up into a few different areas. So on the bookkeeping side, if you don't get your invoices out, you're not going to get paid. If you don't have good, you're not going to collect your cash. If you don't have good payable systems, your vendors are going to shut you down. So to me, it's kind of like a lights on, you know, not very strategic, but crucial component to your business. Month end close, which is part of bookkeeping, is actually very strategic. The faster you close your books and the more accurate it is, the faster you can make decisions about your business. So that's group one. Group two, the FP&A side. This to me is, do you want to be data driven or do you not want to be data driven in terms of your decision making? And it's really a crystal ball. You are looking into the future and trying to make sure that you understand, you know, do I need to cut expenses because I have a cliff coming up and my revenue is going to be taking a dive? Is something working really well on my sales and marketing? I could put more money into it. And so, you know, everybody has to make decisions. By having a really solid financial planning and analysis group, FP&A, we can make it so that we can take the leap of your decision and make it a smaller leap. The likelihood of success is higher. You know, I grew I grew Rise from, you know, zero to almost 40 million in revenue in 16 years. And in a big way that I did that was that I had the data to understand if my sales and marketing was effective, if I was profitable enough, am I growing my cash? I understood what KPIs to look at. I understood the benchmarks to look at. So that's the second bucket. The third bucket, which is resource planning, is probably the most important aspect to running a service-based company. I can't tell you how many people are way under-servicing or way over-servicing their customers, or they're hiring people that they don't need to hire because they're not assigning people to a specific client and a specific service in an intelligent, effective manner. You know, just last week, I was talking to a client of mine, and we were looking at, you know, he wants to generate $150 an hour. He's got a fixed retainer, and he was supposed to deliver 30 hours worth of work in the month of February, and he delivered 80 hours worth of work. And it turns out that it was one employee that was going rogue and was spending way too much time on the account. Well, rather than generating $150 an hour, the person generated like $60 to $70 an hour. And so that's where the resource planning becomes so important. And then lastly, the strategic planning. Everyone has a strategic plan, whether they know it or not. It's what you spend your time and your money on. But if you can stop for a moment and really think about, where do I want to be long-term? Where do I want to be this year? What am I going to focus on for the next 90 days? You can make sure that now you get back to your financial plan analysis, that you're budgeting for the things that are really impactful and budgeting both time and money. So that's a little bit about the why, I would say. And I'll just, since I rambled, I'll just add two more points here.
Yeah, no, go for it.
So the first one is, I generally deal with two types of companies, cash distressed, meaning that they are just trying to figure out how to make payroll. And the second one is, they've grown and you hit a plateau, and all of a sudden you don't know how to grow anymore. Financial insights will help you solve both of those problems.
Yeah. So here's the challenge that I see is a lot of business owners, some are dyslexic, you know, in the mediums, in small and medium sized business, there's a lot of people that have learning disabilities, and that's why they just found their way into that business. I'll give you an example of a big one, 1-800-GOT-JUNK. You've probably heard of them.
Yeah.
They're nearly a $1 billion business. And Brian Scudamore, who founded that, he dropped out of college his second day because, you know, he's dyslexic and everything was all jumbled up in his head. And so a lot of business owners, the details get painful. Just going into all those painful little details, how do you make it accessible to them so they can just say, okay, here's where you need my input, or here's what I need to do, you know, to move on. And let me just kind of give an example. There's somebody who works for me now. She'd worked for me before, quit for a while, and then came back. And she came up to me one day and she starts talking and I'm listening. And she said, when she's done talking, I said, so basically you're saying there was a problem. You identified the problem, you fixed the problem, and you're just here kind of updating me and I don't have anything I need to do. And she said, yes. I'm like, bless you. You're just amazing.
Yeah.
And she is amazing. But her name's Elena. I think she hung the moon. But a lot of business owners just don't want to get into the details, and what you're describing feels detailed.
It's incredibly detailed. And I think it really depends on the size of your company. Okay. If you're a one-person shop with very little revenue, you are probably going to have to get into the details if you want to do it. And I'll go into that in a second. If you're a $20 million company or, you know, a $1 billion company, you probably have a finance department that's taking care of all the details and giving you their insights for you to make your decisions. At the end of the day, you know, I'll give an example. I was talking to a company and they lost, you know, a good chunk of their revenue. They just lost a big client. So, you know, they don't necessarily want to go through all the math and all the details, but they do need to know how much money they have to take out of the business, how much cost they have to take out to make sure that they stay profitable. Or they can make a strategic decision and say, you know what, I'm comfortable losing money because I have such great pipeline that I'm going to go win these new clients and I'll be able to absorb that. But but they need the data to make that decision, and somebody's got to put that together for them. But, you know, if you don't put the detail together, there's a likelihood that you're going to make a really bad decision that could cost you growth or cost you money. You know, so, but I will tell you, because I'm 6 years, you know, I sold Rise in 2020. I'm 6 years into this new job of being a fractional CFO. You are correct. You know, I deal with a lot of marketing agencies, and a lot of marketing agencies, there are creatives. And they didn't start their business because they're like, I can't wait to run the finance department. You know, they started the business because they're amazing creatives and they want to build beautiful creative things. And then all of a sudden they realize I have to be an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
But here's my response is, if you want to be an entrepreneur, then you got to learn how to be a great entrepreneur. You know, everybody who starts a business most likely doesn't start it because they want to run a business. They most likely start it because they're passionate about something and they think they could solve a problem.
Right.
And at some point, you no longer get to solve that problem. You get to run a business. And getting into the weeds and getting into the details, I think, is what makes someone great at being a CEO.
So, and here's kind of circling back to AI.
Yeah.
One of the things I love about AI is I can ask it to sort through all the details and come back with recommendations.
Yep.
And so for me, it feels like the best of both worlds. Now, and I'll just say I'm not quite there on my finances, but when I look at other things, I can go off and say, all right, I'm considering these various things. Please help me make this decision. All of a sudden,
yeah,
I have something that can digest infinite amounts of information.
And really fast.
Really fast, and make judgment
yeah.
calls. And so I'm wondering, is the future, you know, is the future of financial dashboards for CEOs going to be something that has just a few numbers and then a little chat box where they can, you know, chat and ask for input?
Well, as I mentioned to you before this, we started the podcast, you know, I built, it's called Luca, which is named after Luca Pacioli, the founder of accounting, an AI CFO co-pilot. And I do believe the world is headed that way. But what I'll tell you is the LLM is only as good as the data that you give it.
Yeah.
You know, I'll just give you an example. A typical professional service firm, the average spends 8% of their revenue on sales and marketing. So if you ask, you know, Gemini or ChatGPT or Claude or whichever tool you use, you know, what percent of revenue do I spend on sales and marketing? Well, if all of your payroll is bundled, which is typically what I see, you'll have one line on this payroll, but it's your sales and marketing team. It's the team that does client work. It's your CEO. It's everybody. The LLM is not going to be able to answer that question. It's got to take that payroll and identify all the salespeople and all the marketing people and move it into that marketing bucket in order to answer it.
Yeah.
So there is a need, if you want to get the most out of your AI platform, to organize the data so that the platform can actually answer the questions.
Yeah. No, and that's really insightful. You know, as you probably saw the same article, there was a developer who published something on LinkedIn saying basically all of our white collar jobs are over. And there's sort of a structural thought, you know, back in, you know, the late 90s when they were trying to dismantle Microsoft, my belief was, no, leave them alone. The free market works. It will sort itself out. I didn't know how. And, you know, a few years ago when people were talking about dismantling Google, I said, they're not going to hold their dominant position. Somebody will take their spot. And they're like, how? And I said, I don't know. I just know.
Yeah.
I trust the system. And another one of those places where I just trust the system is I don't think technology will eliminate job titles. It won't eliminate jobs, I don't believe.
My answer is I don't know. Without a doubt, there are jobs that existed before, you know, the personal computer came along that don't exist anymore.
Right. I'd put that under job titles.
Well, yeah. And what I would say is there are a few things when a major technology like AI comes around that new jobs will absolutely be created. And the historic view has been that for every job lost, there's been a new job created. But then what you have to figure out is, does that new job have the same value and pay the same compensation? So one, do you have the same number of jobs? And then two, do the jobs, provide, a successful, rich, middle class, or does it create a whole bunch of jobs that are, manual or, low pay jobs that people can't support their families on? And so you have to analyze both the job creation, the job loss, and then the compensation changes as well that come along with it.
Yeah. Now Elon's on the extreme. He believes all these jobs are going to be lost and nobody's going to have a job, and we'll just get distributions from the
That
bots.
will turn into a socialist state because that's the only way that we can support humans.
Yeah.
I've heard multiple people have that argument.
Yeah.
But I also, going back to, I forget, I was talking to someone who, was talking about programmers and how there was some new technology that came out that allowed people to program much faster. And the idea was that every programmer is going to lose their job because you don't need as many programmers because you could program faster. Well, it actually exploded and created a massive amount more jobs
Right.
because now all of a sudden you could build all these things at such a fast rate that they're like, I want to keep going. I want more people. I want more features. I want more stuff. So I think it'll be interesting to see the next 3 to 5 years, the true impact.
Well, and one of the things that you were talking about was structuring the data. You know, I see a huge human element in that. You know,
Yeah.
so that the AI can go in and mine the data in a meaningful way to that particular business.
Yeah.
Talking about marketing, my personal belief is AI is not good at human connection. And
Yeah.
I have a salacious example, proof point of that. If AI was good at human connection, there would be no OnlyFans as a viable business model.
Yeah.
Yeah, the vocabulary is not Shakespeare, it's limited vocabulary, but there's something the human provides that provides an element of connection that removes loneliness for someone. Now, I'm not advocating the business model.
Yeah.
I think we need to fix our human connections rather than, go buy it online. But I see things, there are things that humans can do uniquely well. And so I do see that place. And I hadn't thought about the perspective of, I can't just throw AI a bunch of data and say, tell me what it means. That some level of structuring, maybe I can, but the more structured the data is, if I'm hearing you right,
Yeah.
the more valuable the insights the AI will be able to get from that data because it's structured.
Yeah, just imagine if you gave it one line on it. I spend, $500,000 a month. And that's all they know about you is how much you spend. And then you're like, I lost a client. I need to cut my expenses by $10,000 a month. Where should I cut? Well, it doesn't have any data to any granularity or ability to give you any insights because it doesn't have enough information.
That's such a brilliant insight. I think we've just thrown this broad cloth over AI of, hey, it's going to
Yeah.
figure all this stuff out. And I think that's such a brilliant insight is we still need somebody involved that can help structure the data to enable an AI to come up with the insights.
Yeah. Now it might get at some point where there's some tool that can structure the data faster than a human can, but I don't think we're there yet.
Yeah. Well, and so let's wrap up with this. So real quick, how do you help businesses and how can they contact you?
So we typically work with companies between 5 million and around 30 million in revenue. We have some larger, we have some smaller. We only work with professional service companies, so people who are on B2B selling their time. We focus on three KPIs: your annual growth rate, your profit margin, so your annual revenue growth rate, your profit margin, and how much cash you have relative to your monthly overhead. And people can reach out to me on LinkedIn and follow me. They can go to Fiscal Advocate, FISCALAdvocate.com. We have a great resource section. I have an ebook there. This podcast will be up there. And then you can email me, JON@FiscalAdvocate.com. I'd love to hear from you.
John, thanks for coming on Leaders and Legacies. This has been amazing.
Craig, thanks so much for having me. It's been really a lot of fun.
This is Craig Andrews. I want to thank you for listening to the Leaders and Legacies podcast. We're looking for leaders to share how they're making impact beyond themselves. If that's you, please go to alliesforme.com/guest and sign up there. If you got something out of this interview, we would love you to share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone who would be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, including the hashtag Leaders and Legacies. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss anything, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show. And it means a lot to me. It means a lot to my team. If you want to know more, please go to alliesforme.com or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.